back to the Vermont Conversation. I'm David Goodman. We are broadcasting live today from the UVM Davis Center, which is the site of the Spring Conference for Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility. The conference is called Champion Change. That is the theme. And this half hour, we're going to speak to a trio of Vermont sustainable business leaders. They were part of a keynote talk called Hard Questions for Good Businesses. So to talk about this, we're joined by Sarah Keck. She is the founder of BeesWrap, Dwayne Peterson, who is co-president of Sun Common, and Jed Davis, who is director of sustainability for Cabot Creamery. Welcome to all of you to the Vermont Conversation. So on this question of tough questions for businesses, I want to start with Sarah Keck, the founder of BeesWrap. And first, tell us what BeesWrap is.
BeesWrap is a sustainable alternative to plastic wrap. It is made of organic cotton that is infused with a beeswax mixture. And you use it to wrap your food just as you would plastic wrap. So wrap half a lemon, a sandwich, cover a bowl. It's great for cheese.
Tell us a little bit about the story of the company. When did it begin, and where is it at now?
BeesWrap began 6.5 years ago. I started it in my home. We operated out of my home for the first year and then moved to Bristol to a facility there where we were for 2 years. And most recently moved into Middlebury, where we have a new production facility and fulfillment and offices. We distribute across the country and internationally to 40 countries.
So in the first half hour, Sasha Mayer was talking about the challenge and good fortune of inventing a niche. You know, lactation sweets didn't exist before Mamava. Is that also true of these BeesWrap, replacements for cellophane wrap?
It is. There was a similar product on the market before us, but in a very small part of the country, it wasn't widely known. So we brought it to the forefront and had to do a lot of educating around it to help people to understand how to use a reusable product that in this way.
Did you have a business background prior to starting this?
I do not have a business background.
So what was the bumpy road to getting this thing going and learning how to run a business?
There were a lot of bumps. I have always worked for myself in one form or another, and my parents are both small business owners, so I have it in my background and had great mentors along the way. But scaling a business that's quickly growing has been challenging. Scaling our systems is something that is always on the forefront of my mind and is something we're constantly challenged with to be able to respond from the incoming interest from the public.
Tell me the best piece of advice you've gotten, one that you repeat to yourself often.
I have spoken to my father a lot through this process, and I would say that his voice is the one that I hear most frequently when I run into something that is challenging. And he just casually says, "You'll figure it out." and we figure it out. I figure it out. And that's really what it comes down to, is sitting down and putting your thought to it and drawing people into the conversation and finding a solution.
Dad telling you you'll figure it out. That's the one that keeps you going. I like that. That's low-hanging fruit there. And Dwayne, I think your mic may not work. So when we switch to you, we may have to switch headphones. But Sarah, you mentioned that your business is now 35 people, and 30 of them are women. So this is... that's an interesting, you've managed to flip the script. How have you done that? How have you made this a majority female business?
It was not intentional. I think that there are a number of factors that help this to come about. In our production, we've largely grown through word of mouth. Our employees understand and are very committed to BeesRep, and they have a very tight-knit community where they support each other both professionally and in their personal lives. I think that is something that draws women to BeesRep, also the collaborative nature of our work. A lot of our bringing employees is through, like I said, through word of mouth, and that that it's known that BeesRep is a great place to work in a supportive environment is important to women. There's a lot of challenges, especially when with mothers and having to leave early to pick up kids, having to stay home because of sick days and snow days, and having an environment that is accepting of the demands outside of the workplace is really important.
Dwayne Peterson from Sun Common. You have talked about, there's been a lot of talk in Vermont about how we keep young people there, young people in the state. You don't accept that that's a problem. Why not?
Well, I think it's just kind of nutty to expect happening, inquisitive, wanderlust young people to stay put. I mentioned, look at all the literature, right? I mean, Buddha, Siddhartha, Jesus, like these people wandered. And I wandered, and I bet a lot of your listeners have wandered. And so the notion that we can somehow, shackle them here seems silly. I think the greater opportunity is to offer them opportunities to come back. Like in my business, I want people with jobs to work for us. And so if folks in their youth went away, they sought the bright lights, they went to the big city, they got some real experience doing something out there, but then they came to their senses and they want to come back here, they want to be near their family as their parents get older, they want to raise little children here like I did with my wife. Like, I think the small and medium-sized business community, the opportunity is to give folks the job opportunities to come back. And what do you know, when they do, they really want to work here, they want to live here, they want to raise their kids here, they want to work in these businesses, and with full fervor, as opposed to somehow locking them up here.
Sarah's business is unusual in that it's majority women, quite heavily majority women. Yours is a little unusual in that it's quite heavily majority young people. You are probably the oldest guy in the building, is that right?
Oh, by a factor of several, yeah. So I think our median age is 32. So we have attracted a young workforce, and to me that's great. I mean, these are people with passion and commitment and dare I say, energy. They're probably not going to work for us for 30 years, and I don't expect them to. We do want them to, it is a business, and we are trying to build a lot of solar to benefit the climate, so we need to get stuff done. It's not a party, but while they're with us, they bring their full selves to it, and when they leave and pursue their next adventure, maybe they take a little bit of what they learned with us out into the world, and that's okay with me, too.
So the world of solar, you've described being on the solar coaster, which has some highs and some lows, which is that you're constantly getting the thrill of a new sale and getting knocked down by the loss of subsidies and whatnot. How do you survive businesses like sort of predictable even growth, and you are kind of on this, as you say, the solar coaster? How do you survive the disruption that you encounter?
Well, we are mission driven. I mean, this is a market solution to climate change, and so we are driven. And when, I don't know if a sports analogy is appropriate, but when we get thrown a curveball, it's like, okay, that was unfortunate. Like our president unilaterally, with the stroke of his pen alone, imposed a 30% tax on all globally sourced solar panels.
Well, not just from China.
No, right. So, like, that's not helpful. I mean, we're trying to deal with climate change here, folks, and you just increased our cost of goods by 30%. Like, oh my gosh. okay, well, after half an hour of gnashing our teeth, it's like, what are we going to do about it? Because that's the hand, and we're gonna have to play it. And so we figured it out. So the leadership, and then we hire people who are okay with that and who will roll with that. That they are also driven by the mission, and when it hits the fan, when the solar coaster dips, you know, like whatever, what are we going to do?
So you run a business, a rapidly growing business. You've expanded into the Hudson River Valley of New York, SunCommon has. But you also have a whole other side, which is marrying the business to advocacy and activism. A lot of businesses are nervous about being politically aligned in some fashion. Are you?
It's interesting. I think most big businesses are not nervous. They do a lot of advocacy, but they do it secretly, right? They hire lobbyists who ply the K Street, you know, blah, blah. They give campaign donations through their manufacturers' associations or whatever. I think a lot of businesses are intensely involved, but they do it secretly because they're embarrassed by what they're doing. It's just purely out of self-interest, purely out of squeezing that last bit of profit out of their customers or out of the society. I prefer to be sort of upfront. And if we do that and we reflect our values, that's just kind of the way we roll. And I actually think most of our customers are appreciative of that. So we do engage in activism in ways that don't necessarily benefit our business. But
like what?
Well, so in the Vermont legislature this last go around, there's been a big push for parental leave. You know, so that new moms and, dare I say, new dads can spend a little time with the creatures that they just birthed. Like, that's a rather important time for everybody's life and a family. And, you know, the United States is one of the few industrialized nations that doesn't provide that benefit for all of its people. So the Vermont legislature is talking about, well, maybe our people would benefit from that. Well, we offer that at our company, and it works out really, really well. And so we're there in the state house, just, you know, we're not wagging our finger and telling other people what to do. We're just sharing our own experience that it's worked out really well for our people. And I think it's worked out really well for our business, like the retention, which turns out to be a big deal in running a business. You know, every time one of our people leaves and we have to replace them, that's kind of an expense and a yank. And that sure happens a lot for young families where the dad or the mom, you know, they can't make it work. They got to actually quit their job to be with the kid. So our people come back from their parental leave, and they're stoked. They're happy that they had that opportunity, and they come back really eager to work. So we just go to the state house and share that. And I don't know that any customers are going to get mad at us for doing that, or that, like, we're overstepping our bounds, or that this is some kind of wacko, you know, fringe political point of view. We're just sharing some of the business practices that have worked for us.
You've also, instead of waiting for universal health care, Medicare for all, whatever you want to call it, you offer it at your business. Explain your health care program and how it works.
Well, again, the United States, alas, is, I think, the only Western industrialized country that doesn't provide health care for its people. You know, and that's a rather good policy that they have. So we at SunCommon support universal health care, and so we just act like a single-payer health care provider. So we pay for 100% of the health insurance premiums for our employees and their families, and we pay their deductibles. So of all the things they've got to worry about, like, let's not have them worry about how they're going to pay for health care for their sick kid. And we started the company that way, and so it's just baked into our so-called profit and loss statement. And for sure, it's not cheap, but, like, that, in my view, that's why our customers give us money, like, so that we can make decisions like that on how to care for our people and how to build a really strong business.
You are not a businessman. You've had a colorful history as everything from a LA cop to the chief of staff, to Tom Hayden, the legendary political activist turned state senator in California. And now you're a businessman. Oh, and you were also, you came to Vermont to work for Ben and Jerry's. What advice sticks in your head as that you repeat to yourself to navigate the churning waters of business?
So this is advice I give to myself. Just stay true to what I believe. So one of the many things I learned along the way is every decision in life is an opportunity to reflect our values. Who we associate with, who we try to help, who we stay away from, the cars that we drive, the house that we live in, the clothes that we wear, the food that we eat. Every decision is an opportunity to reflect what's important to us. And so that's sure true with a business. A business is two things. It's just really a bunch of people. And maybe it started with a good idea way back when, but then it quickly becomes like, how are we going to help these people work together to get this big thing done? And it's resources. So if it's fortunate and it generates revenue from its customers, then you've got a bank account and some money. And so, like, what do we do with that? How do we spend that? And there again, so how do we take care of our people? What kind of office do we want to be in? What does the car fleet look like? What are the raw ingredients? Where do we get them from? And who are those people? And how are they treating the earth? And so it's all, every one of these decisions is just an opportunity to reflect our values. And it's kind of a joy and a luxury to have that opportunity.
You're listening to the Vermont Conversation. We are broadcasting live this week from the VBSR annual spring conference. And in this half hour, we're speaking with three leaders of sustainable businesses in Vermont. We have Sarah Keck, the founder of Beeswrap, Dwayne Peterson, the co-president of Sun Common. And now we turn to Jed Davis. He is the director of sustainability for Cabot Creamery. Jed, where does Cabot Creamery fit into the sustainability picture? What is your day-to-day work?
Well, I'm really pleased that as a dairy cooperative, come 10 years ago, we decided to dedicate one position initially 100% of the time to working on issues around sustainability, understanding our impacts and how we might better manage those on both the farm side of our business as well as on with our facilities and other parts of our organization. That has now gotten to the point where we have a feisty little team of two people who dedicate all of their time to understanding those impacts and looking for improvements in ways that our organization can strive to be more sustainable.
What are the challenges? I mean, we hear a lot about the struggles of dairy farmers. Where are we at right at this moment in May 2019 in terms of the price of milk and what they're getting compensated?
Yeah, right now we're at a time where our members, our farmers, have suffered through probably the worst 5 years of milk prices in a couple of generations. And so it has been a real difficult time on the farm. And I know in the conversations I have with some of our farmers, and I would say, you know, I'm always impressed the extent to which our farmers have an angle on sustainability specific to their farms, but with a real desire to make things better. I mean, these are people who, in the case of Cabot, you know, it's typically multiple generations that the farms have been stewards of their land, and they want to make sure this continues on. And a lot of times when we have a price swing on the bottom side right now, it makes it hard for them to make some of the investments in things that they know would have positive sustainability impacts for the long term, but at a time when the short term variability around the economic bottom line is a little bit troubling.
So we're having this conversation as a trade war with China is ramping up. Is this going to affect the farmers of Cabot?
It already has. You know, in other words, as this has ramped up over several different escalations covering a number of different products, We see it directly in terms of some of the products that we export, and we see it indirectly in terms of some of the things that, you know, our farmers are dealing with on a daily basis. So absolutely, yes.
What are the products that go from Vermont to China?
So, for example, when we make our award-winning cheddar cheese, everybody remembers from Miss Muffet that you have cheese and whey. And the whey is a great source of protein. And so we have products where we essentially dried whey that often gets exported because that's dried and is much more transportable, let's say, than refrigerated products. That actually we export to almost three dozen countries now at this point.
So what's happening with that, and what's the China piece of that?
You know, that business has really taken a tough turn. I mean, we're fortunate. I think we make a really good product. And so some of our trading partners in China, even when the initial tariffs came through, you know, we were able to make arrangements to share in some of that pain, you know, split some of the increases rated. But at a certain point in time, in some cases, those markets have essentially dried up.
Cabot is located in the Northeast Kingdom, which is, you know, an area that has long had economic challenges. How do you provide, you know, jobs and opportunity in that environment? It's also, we're hearing, you know, that there's very low unemployment, so it's hard to find workers. Talk a little bit about the employment picture where you work.
That's right. And obviously, perhaps similar to Beeswrap, we're in a situation where it's partly production and manufacturing employees, and also, you know, office and administrative employees, sales teams and things like that. So it's a variety of folks. But I think generally speaking, you know, we've found that there are certain things that we can do to be more attractive. We have to put out as an attractive face and package for potential employees as we can. We found that one of the things contributing to that was in 2012 when we became a certified B Corp. You know, we found that was something that resonated, especially with some of the younger employees.
Explain what a B Corp is.
So a B Corp, this is a certification for an organization. It's sort of a yardstick on how the organization is on a number of topics related to accountability and transparency and management of social and environmental bottom lines. And it's a third-party certification, so it's someone else saying, here's how we think you're operating, you know, and it's a sliding scale. It's all around the concept of continuous improvement. But once you get above a certain number of points, you're eligible to be certified as a B Corp. And B Corps collectively are, you know, sort of branding themselves as, you know, businesses working together for a better good.
Sarah, I know that Sarah Keck, co-founder of Beeswrap, I know that you just became a B Corp, or?
We did. We were certified about a month ago.
Hold on. You just said you were certified about a month ago. What did you have to change in the way you did business in order to become a certified B Corp?
Most of what we were doing was in line with the B Corp standards. What we didn't have in place was documentation of what we were doing, and that is something that was important to our business as we grow, both for our employees and our customers and our vendors, so that we were better able to track improvements where we might be slipping somewhere, and to be able to convey to our customers what we're doing. Without that documentation and tracking, it's hard to talk about it.
We women-led businesses, women leaders, business leaders have often observed that there are special challenges that women in business face. They don't have necessarily access and relationship into, you know, the banking or the money establishments that enable loans and such things to happen. Have you encountered special challenges, and how do you see the role of a woman-led business?
I find this to be a very challenging question to answer, as I don't like to make generalities about women. But one of the biggest challenges I've had is being both a mother and the owner of a business, and where those conflicts come together.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it there. I want to thank all three of you, Sarah Keck, the founder of Beeswax, Dwayne Peterson from Sun Common, Jed Davis from Cabot Creamery. Thanks to all of you for broadcasting live with us from the VBSR Spring Conference this week. That does it for this week's Vermont Conversation. You can hear this and all shows at vermontconversation.com, and we'll be back next Wednesday at 1 with another Vermont Conversation. I'm David Goodman. Thanks for listening. The Vermont Conversation with David Goodman, this special feature from Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility, is underwritten in part by Concept 2, designers and manufacturers of Concept 2 rowing oars, indoor rower, ski erg, and bike erg, and proud to support nonprofit groups such as Salvation Farms, which nourishes Vermont by distributing produce farmers can't sell. Let's Grow Kids, a statewide campaign about the need for more high-quality, affordable childcare in Vermont to better support our children, families, community, and economy. Green Mountain Power, delivering clean, cost-effective, and highly reliable power to customers and offering cutting-edge products and services to reduce costs and carbon. The Alchemist Brewery of Waterbury and Stowe, proud B Corp using the power of business to support a clean environment and economic opportunity for all. UVM Medical Center, Burlington, Vermont, the heart and science of medicine. And by Stowe Cider, with crisp, clean, and creative award-winning flavors. Visit the tasting room in Stowe or buy Stowe Cider throughout New England, upstate New York, and Washington, D.C.